Hey guys, welcome to the Pacing Racing Podcast, the Canadian triathlon podcast made in mind for the age group triathletes. So today we have German pro triathlete Maurice Clavel on for episode number 9 of the Road to Roth training series. So for the first time listeners here, a bit of a backstory with the Road to Roth series. At the beginning of August, I announced I'll be doing my first full distance triathlon at Challenge Roth in 2020. And since then, I found that a ton of listeners were actually on a similar path, whether that was for Roth or another race, but they too were on their crazy journey to their first full distance triathlon and looking forward to hearing content specific to the full distance. Now, of course, never having actually done this distance before, I figured that everyone could benefit the most in a series where I interview top pro triathletes and coaches that will be able to provide a ton of training tips specific to the full distance, as well as give us that motivation and insight that we need to help maximize our performances come race day. So this man needs no introduction, as Maurice is a dominant athlete in today's pro men's field and is joining us in his offseason after a great battle in Kona. And what's super fascinating about Maurice is he placed third at Challenge Roth in 2017 in what was his first ever full distance race with a time of 8 hours, 4 minutes, and 53 seconds. Now that really resonates with me for this podcast, because that journey for him is what myself and many listeners are going through today. You know, that build up to your first full distance race at the iconic Challenge Roth. So Maurice also goes over some excellent training advice, like how to dig deep in training, how to fuel your body with proper nutrition, how to train the beginning of your race season, and riding with wattage, and so much more, guys. So I'm really excited for this one, and I could keep going on all day, but let's hear it from Maurice himself, and let's cue the music. Today's show is brought to you by two sponsors. The first one is Brown Sports Bike Shop, located in Toronto, Ontario. So I've always wanted to partner up alongside a local bike shop, but I was reluctant to commit because I never found a bike shop that encompassed everything I wanted in a shop until I met JP from Brown Sports. When you want to help represent a bike shop, you want to know you can be absolutely sure you can refer your friends and family and listeners to them and know they're being taken care of in the best hands and getting the best prices. The team at Brown Sports are super knowledgeable when it comes to proper bike selection and bike fitting. In fact, JP is a Retool and IBFI Level 2 certified fitter and will go above and beyond helping you select the right bike for you and go to great lengths in making sure you leave the best bike fit possible. And they have a huge selection of bikes, including an incredible lineup from Quintana Roo Bikes, and they're also the only company in Canada to offer up the 51 Speed Shop products, so it's really an all-in-one shop. So it's not just a bike shop though. They also have a ton of great nutritional products, swim gear, and running gear. So if you're needing to add something to your triathlon repertoire, then there's a good chance they have it. And I'm currently working with JP now to get my bike fit dialed in, as last season I realized I was losing some valuable wattage and coming off the bike way more fatigued than I had to be because my positioning was way off. So I'll be doing a video of the fitting process when it's all done. So if you want to see that, then be sure to sign up to the Pacing Racing YouTube channel to be first notified when that comes out. And alongside carrying some of the best triathlon and road bike selections, Brown Sports also has a demo room for all the best indoor bike trainers, including the TAC series, the Wahoo series, and even the latest 4i Flight trainer. So if you're in the market for a new bike trainer, then they are also the experts in that area, and they'll help you set up the proper trainer and get you a good price. So if you want to go check them out in person, you can find them at 2447 Bloor Street West in Toronto at the Jane and Bloor intersection, or course, you can also check them out and see their full inventory and list of services online at brownsports.com. And lastly, you can follow them on Instagram or Facebook by searching Brown Sports. So the second sponsor of today's show is Soul Fitness Canada, who is a premier global name in the fitness industry and has become one of the fastest growing fitness brands across the US and Canada. And as you all know, we're officially in the winter months, which means everything you build up now in training will be paying dividends in your race season next summer. With a few of my big races on the horizon next summer, including the 70.3 Chattanooga and the Datev Challenge Roth, I'll be ramping up the volume in running, which requires a treadmill that I could put kilometers into worry-free. And with tons and tons of research, I found a brand that I could stand behind for value, their quality, and their service, and I'm excited to say I ended up getting the Soul Fitness TT8 treadmill. So if you want to see my full review video on this, then head to my YouTube channel by searching Pacing and Racing, where I do full detailed outline of how this treadmill works, where I have it set up, and all that kind of fun stuff. But to briefly touch on the treadmill I went with, it's a 4-horsepower motor with 15 levels of incline and 6 levels of decline with speeds up to 12 miles per hour. It has heart rate monitoring with both the pulse grips and chest strap options, and the TT8 features a large running surface, 22-inch by 60-inch, which is awesome, and it has handlebar-mounted speed and incline buttons, onboard speakers, cooling fan, and so much more. So These are all huge, important factors for me when I went looking for a treadmill. And you know, another thing that might resonate with listeners, it's not just about the winter training. In fact, I have a two-year-old who happens to love her nap time. So I love the idea I'm able to go for a long run on the treadmill while she sleeps. And I think that's a great way to have effective time management for any time-crunched triathletes out there. So if you guys are in the market for treadmills, indoor bikes, rowers, or ellipticals for your pain cave, then head to soulfitness.ca/pacing and racing. And again, Soul is spelled S-O-L-E. Now, Soul Fitness is providing Pace Racing listeners a free equipment mat with any cardio equipment purchase from their website, which is a $50 value. So thanks so much to them. And all you need to do to claim this is type pacing and racing during checkout. Now, enjoy the podcast. So Maurice, welcome to the Pace Racing podcast, man. How you doing?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward. Yeah, I'm good. Just finished my workout on Swift, so couldn't be better.
Oh, awesome. There you go. No, that's awesome. And thanks so much for coming on the show. We're super happy to have you here today. And there's a ton to talk about, especially to do with preparing for a race such as Challenge Roth. But before we dive into those specifics, I guess, for the listeners who don't know, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and what got you into triathlon in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I'm German-French triathlete. Dad is French, mother is German. I'm living in Germany right now, but very close to the French border. So as well talking French. I was first a swimmer, so I started swimming at the age of 12, so pretty late. Yeah, and then come into triathlon at the age of 17, 18. Yeah. And since then I'm doing triathlon and more and more professional, let's say, thinking like, okay, let's try new things because swimming was getting boring. let's start to do new things. And triathlon was good because I really love to be in the nature. And that's now why I'm here.
Amazing. So I guess, so you started at age 17, 18, you switched over to triathlon. Now, at what point did you decide that you realized that you were good enough to, you know, commit full time and go professional?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I did first like short distance sprint distance triathlon, and it was in the kind of national team. It was more or less fun. Let's say I was just racing for fun, but yeah, I did pretty well. I did like European Cup and some World Cups. Yeah, I started studying then. Yeah, and after a while, I was like, yeah, the World Cup, you just miss the first group, and then the race is almost over. And then I said, okay, no, this is not what I want, and I almost stopped for 1 year. And yeah, and then I found like a new coach, and he said, let's go to the middle distance. Let's try middle distance. And I prepared for this type of distance and switched to this type in 2014. Yeah, and then immediately it went pretty well. I came like vice European champion on the 70.3 distance. And yeah, I was like really surprised how good I did. Yeah, and then more and more I like was like, okay, let's try to find some sponsors or partners. And I was like growing into it, and more my time at university was going down because I had to could cover all the living with money of my partners, and more into training camps. So yeah, and then it was like, it was not really a decision from now to tomorrow that, okay, now I'm professional. It was like, okay, let's try it. And then it went pretty well. And yeah, I was then like more and more professional, let's say.
Amazing. Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's always fascinating to see how many short course triathletes, the ones that compete in the ITU, inevitably make their way up to the middle distance, and they do incredibly well. I'm always amazed at how well they do. The training and the fitness levels just carry over pretty easily if you're so used to that sprint triathlon, right? The Olympic distance, right?
That's true. That's absolutely true. Especially now with the Norwegian guys. I mean, yeah. There's nothing more to say. I think that the 70.3 distance is a lot about intensity, and for many years it was like the athletes didn't see this, But at the end, it's a really, you can really hammer down these 4 hours, or like 3 hours, 3.5 hours, let's say. And yeah, it's a lot about intensity, intensity. And that's why I think the Olympic distance guys, yeah, they do pretty well. And the Ironman, like the real like Ironman athletes, they're way too slow. They're not used anymore to this high intensity. And that's why, yeah, Olympic distance triathletes are like so good in this distance. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, no, it's amazing. And then, so it seemed like in 2017, if I'm correct, you made your way into the long distance courses, right? And then, flash forward to, let's just talk about more recent race here. Let's briefly touch on Kona this year, because it looked like it was your second time there on the Big Island, and you were actually in the lead pack for quite a while there. So, I mean, how'd you feel about this race overall? I can imagine it was quite a grueling race, right?
Yeah, it's fun because everybody's talking about this race and about me. you're absolutely right. I mean, in 2017, I did my first long distance. It was Challenge Rough. It went also pretty well. And this year was my fifth long distance in my life and my second time in Kona. I was in the lead after the swim, in the lead pack. The swim went pretty well, I can say. Yeah, and then I was just following guys in front of me, and after a while I was thinking, yeah, okay, let's move to the front, because I was really feeling comfortable. And you know, like also to pay attention to keep the distance is also taking you some power. I mean, you really have to pay attention, yeah. Not go into this draft zone. And what I really want was like going my rhythm. So yeah, I went to the front and was really really focused. And I wouldn't say I didn't care about the others, but yeah, I just wanted to do my rhythm. And doesn't matter what the other athletes are doing. I mean, if it would be too slow, then they would like overtook me, and if too fast, then okay, then it's not my problem. So yeah, I was really going my rhythm, and yeah, actually I was leading the race, and it was quite a good feeling. But then after 110k on the bike course, there was like a big, from one second to another, I never had this type of blowing up. It was like boom, and no power anymore in my legs. So new experience, and yeah, it was, let's say, a mistake. But now I have to take this kind of stuff, and I have to learn from that. That's the main outcome of this race for me.
For sure, yeah. Like from what it sounded like by one of your posts there, you said that by transition two, when you got there, you were on the verge of wanting to drop out, right? Like you felt pretty rough on that going into the run, right?
Yeah, yeah. I had never had it. I mean, I was like feeling so pretty, feeling so well after the turning point, yeah, in Javi, and then on the way down, I grabbed my special needs and stuff, and then from one second to another, I was like, oh, do I have a puncture? You know, like, no, not really. And then, yeah, Alex getting, they got so heavy and heavy. And after like another hour, I couldn't even turn the pedal anymore. So I was like, really, I couldn't understand what happened. And yeah, and then I was like, okay, what, I mean, when I'm quitting the race right here, I'm in the middle of nowhere. So it doesn't make sense. So let's try. Let's try to finish the bike. Yeah, and then I was in transition two, and then I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I just followed the schedule, like, you know, in right. A way you are in a tunnel. But yeah, and then I was in the 10. I was like, I can't start. But I mean, yeah, it's for me. In another way, it was like it's the only way to go. There is no way to drop out. But I was feeling so ugly. But yeah, I didn't give up. I don't know why, but I didn't. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I mean, it's good to see, right? It shows like, you know, a solid character that to just push through, even though you knew you were suffering through the race and you just wanted to get through it and finish the race just to get through it. So I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, it's crazy to see how well you've done over these years. And and how you've been doing in the full distance triathlon the last few years, right? Because as you mentioned, your first race was only back in 2017 there. So I mean, looking now, of course, post Kona, I can assume it's safe to say you're officially in the off season, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I just started training again like 2 weeks ago, but yeah, I'm pretty much in the off season. And I can say that like right now, I'm really, really happy that I didn't drop out from Kona. I still had or have to fight against this like bad race and let's say wrong decision to go in the front and like yeah what happened like the wrong tactique, but if I wouldn't have dropped out, then it would be hell like right now.
Right,
because yeah, if you take like I did not finish into the off season, for me it's like I could handle it. No,
that's so true. I think that's awesome. A good way to kind of end the season with a hard battle, but you still finished it. And that's all that matters right now. So that's awesome. And I mean, as we look into next season, like how do you finish up this season and how do you restart going into next season? Like, do you start back into strength training, or are you a guy that does like low heart rate zone training, or what's your typical way of, you know, kind of starting out in a new season in training?
That's an interesting question. And especially right now, because I changed my coach, not only because of Hawaii, no, not at all. My coach trained me like since end of 2013, preparing 2014. I changed because I needed something new. Right now I'm with a new coach, a German one. And yeah, we just started, and the way I started the building of the new season is quite different. I do a lot of strength training, because strength training I neglected a lot the last years. So there's a lot of improvements to do. Strength training and high intensity. Back to high intensity, that's like mainly the two things I'm currently doing. Yeah, so strength, high intensity, and of course, some really low intensity, because otherwise you're gonna die.
Yeah. Good. That's good to hear, because yeah, a lot of age groupers listening today would be, you know, wondering the same question right now. They're in the same point in their season where they have to start thinking about the next season ahead and how they should tackle training. So it's always a question of a lot of people of should they be doing long distance now or should they be doing strength training? And so I think you kind of answered it there pretty well. It seems to be the smart approach to it. So that's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, sorry, just for us in Germany here, the weather is so bad. So okay, you can go, you can do some Swift things, sessions on Swift. That's fine. I'm doing the same, but I mean, it's raining and stuff. So yeah, you don't go out and go like for a 5 hour ride. So why not go into the gym? I mean, that's perfect right now. Perfect to give your body a solid base of strength. And then when it's starting to get better here, then you can go out and as well, like go into the turbo for 5 hours. It's hard. I mean, and if you have a nice program on Swift, like just on your own, I mean, with some really like nice intervals, then like 1.5 hours is just like going like buff. Then it's done. And that's why also it's like fitting perfectly in this time of the year and this period of the year, I'd say. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, it's funny because same thing here. I'm in Canada. So, I mean, I retired my bike from outdoors and put it on the indoor trainer for Swift back in November. So it's going to be a long winter ahead here. But now, talking about Swift there really quick, do you ever do or have you ever tried any Swift races yet? Or what's your sort of take on Swift? Do you just use it for the training, the custom training plans on the app, or? How do you use it?
I have to say I'm pretty new on Swift. I did just a couple of trainings there. I'm pretty new to everything. I mean, I've never worked with Training Peaks as well. never worked with Watt. So with Team My Watts and stuff. So yeah, it sounds crazy, but it is like it is. So I'm pretty excited about all this. And I'm using, right now, I'm using Swift for customized programs. Yeah, but in a nice surroundings, let's say. So there's no free riding for me. It's really like my program. But I really love this kind of community and seeing other around and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm awesome. Doing. No, yeah, the Zwift's a great community. So that's pretty fascinating too. And I'm pretty shocked about that. I just kind of assumed all the pro triathletes are always using the Training Peaks and stuff, but interesting that you just got on board. So that you just started using Watts. So that's good to see, right? Because a lot of people think they have to that they'll swear by using wattage. So the mm-hmm. fact that you've had so many races and done so well at so many without really ever using watts, I think that can kind of stand for itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good thing you mentioned. I mean, the watts is good, but it's in numbers also. Numbers never lie. Yeah, of course. But you also need this the feeling for your body, the feeling for your performances. And you know, if you really have to dig in deep, then you can't look at your watts or you can't look at your watch. You just have to concentrate on yourself and really go for it. And then it's all about you and your body and your mental strength. And that's, yeah, what I developed in the couple of years now without you using all these kind of stuff. I was really like, I wanted to do well. And I really know how my body is responding to some stuff. But now for me, because I worked like quite a lot of time, like for many years now without any, let's say, analyzing tools, for me, it's now perfect to have just the really like the opposite, really being strict on wattage and stuff, on data, like really data-based. This is what I'm really do right now. But for many of the age groupers, which are growing up like with what I can really recommend to do some sessions just without any computers and stuff, just going out also without any mobile, yeah, just going out and do your run, do your bike and listen to the nature. It sounds crazy, but yeah, it's really it's good. Yeah, it's good.
Awesome. No, great advice. That's solid. So I wanted to switch up here and talk a bit about Challenge Roth. Now, can you walk us through how you felt back in 2017 with finishing that iconic Challenge Roth race? And it was your first long distance triathlon and you came in third on the podium and must have been just quite a surreal moment, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. I didn't expect this really kind of big race. There's around 300,000 spectators around. And yeah, I was swimming in the front. I was first out of the water, I think. Yeah. And then I was in the lead pack. And when we crossed some small villages, I mean, there were some fireworks and they did fireworks. And you pass in these small villages and, you know, it's like in the middle of nowhere. And you say, what the f*** is going on? Yeah. I mean, what? It's like, yeah. So you're really like, you can't believe it. And then things got better and better because I was then leading on the bike and leading for a long time on the run till kilometer 25 till Bart Arnaud dropped me. Yeah. And yeah, it was just amazing. The crowds, the huge crowds and stuff. So it was really emotional, and especially also because it was my long distance. And I've chosen this one because exactly of these kind of special, I've heard a lot of crazy spectators and stuff. And that's why I've chosen Challenge Roth. And it was the best choice, I can say. Yeah. Yeah. So
awesome.
A lot of emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I find it's amazing to hear that story, right? Because I said in my intro to this podcast that it really resonates with me that your story here, because I'll be doing Challenge Roth 2020 as my first full distance triathlon. And the reason why I picked that was similar to what you just said there too, right? Like, you know, you want it to be a memorable moment. You want it to be a spectacular race, that one that you'll remember. So why not do it in one where, you know, the crowd and the atmosphere is just top notch and it's just incredible. Yeah. So it's cool to see that you had a journey like that. And then especially how it went so well, like, were you expecting that you would, you know, get on the podium, and were you expecting around the time of 8:04, or like how did that all play out for you as you're racing?
No, not at all. It was my first long distance, and I just went to the race, and I just want to see what happened and if the long distance is something for me. This was the main thing for me. And then the beginning of the bike, I get like some stomach problems. and I threw all my special needs on my bike. I threw them away, you know. When I'm thinking right now about this, it's like crazy. Yeah, I just threw them away. It's like, no, I don't need this. I just grabbed the stuff from the aid stations. Yeah, it was crazy, but this is the rookie style. Yeah.
Awesome. No, that's funny. Yeah. Eh? So now I guess what could you tell us about the race course of Challenge Roth? Like, were there any tips or advice that you could pass on to age groupers who will be doing that as their first race? Now, things like bike and run course, is it pretty straightforward, or are there some things to be mindful of on the course?
All I can say is the course is pretty gentle to the athletes, I can say. And also the running course, there are like no bad surprises. So, but the only thing is you don't have to over push because of the spectators. This is dangerous because especially on the two laps on the bike and also on the run. You really have to watch the numbers and not to overdo, because the spectators are really pushing you. And it doesn't matter if you're first, if you're leading, or if you're 904th, it doesn't matter. So they're going to push you. And this is then, yeah, sometimes it's dangerous. So really concentrate on yourself. Take the positive energy, of course. Take. But don't overpace. Yeah, this is all I can say. And
very good. Yeah, that's excellent to know, and especially, you know, going up like Solar Hill, right? Like, yeah, not to yeah, go full yeah, wattage up there.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Because then I know this feeling, and then you go into the Solar Hill, and then you say, "What the crazy!" And then you are so like touched by these emotions, and then you go at the end of the Solar Hill, you're going all out. Yeah. Oh, and this is, it's still like a long distance. Yeah? And then you're watching your watts or like your heart rate, and you say, oh, I went all out. I mean, this is not what I wanted to do before, but I did it. Shit. Yeah. So don't do this. Just enjoy, take the positive energy, and go your way. Yeah.
Awesome. That's good advice. So if I show up there in July, and if I'm at top of the Solar Hill, and then if I'm out of breath, and I should have been listening to Maurice when he was talking about the podcast. That's good. So, I mean, just kind of talking briefly here about, you know, memorable moments about Challenge Roth. Like, you just spoke on a little bit there where you're driving through or cycling through some small communities and they had fireworks and stuff. Like, when you look back, is there anything about the day or the week, you know, either before or after, that stands out to you the most, that, you know, whether it was the after party celebrations or, you know, the festival leading up to it, is there anything that kind of strikes out to you that would be something worthwhile to pay attention to for an age grouper going there for their first time?
I mean, all the weekend, or let's say the 4 days before and the 1 day after, it's like a dream. It's crazy. It's a different world. The whole village, the whole region is diving into this triathlon world, and everyone is talking about triathlon. You see all around, you can see like welcome triathletes and posters everywhere on the houses, because also many of the people there are doing homestay. So they're really proud of having the triathlon and having all these athletes there. And then of course, I mean, the after race party is great, and all the village is like the race village and finish line and expo. Yeah, it's like go a week before and then enjoy every day there. It's really unique. It's really unique. There's nothing, everything is unique, and there's so many, many nice things around. Everyone is smiling, everyone is happy, and it's really like a community. And this is what makes it special, I think.
Awesome. No, I think that's great. And it's awesome to hear. And, you know, to hear this from someone who's been there before and has done so well too, I think it's always awesome. And it gives people that motivation they want just to, you know, get through these winter months of training and have something to look forward to. So I think that's excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess one of the last questions about Challenge Roth here before we switched up, you know, talking about how it was your first full distance triathlon, and we were just talking about pacing. Now, you never used wattage at that point. So how are you able to find your paces that you wanted to keep for essentially your first full distance triathlon, never having actually done that distance of a race before? Because I think that's something that most age groupers struggle with, is how fast should they go without overdoing it, or on the opposite end, you know, going too easy on their first long distance triathlon?
Yeah, that's really a good question. It's really hard because for me it was I was training a lot with Sebastian Kienle before the race, and Ronny Schildknecht. It was good for me because we went a lot on in race pace mode, so I had quite an orientation how fast and how the long distance pacing is, and what I have feeling, what my feelings are. But during the race, I was riding with Terenzo Buzzone and Timo Bracht, and they both they are really experienced in pacing. And with my coach, before we just said stay in the lead group with Terenzo and Timo. Don't do crazy things. Let just ride with them, and then we're gonna see what happened. And this is what I did. Until kilometer 140, I stayed in the group with Terenzo and Timo. And at the end, it was like they showed me the pacing and how to do. But for an age trooper, it's for sure. It's for sure better, especially on race day, to have the watts and to know like exactly how far you could go. And that's what I would do for the next season for every race, because it's key, I think. Yeah. Also.
Perfect. No, I think that's awesome. Excellent. So switching up a little bit here, this is something that can always, you know, especially resonate with age groupers as well, but I'm curious to hear your take on it as a pro triathlete. You have many commitments there, like training, so you have sponsorship obligations, travel, and things like that. So how do you find time, you know, how do you find that balance with family time, you know, some downtime to yourself, while still making sure that you are able to, you know, train and perform at the top of your peak performance?
Yeah, that's sometimes really hard. I don't know. I just take my time, and also sometimes training is not everything, you know. This is also something important. Training is there for improving your performance. But on some points, especially when you're working or when you have family, then training can also be bad for like recovery, or if you're not fully recovered, and then you're training, and or when you're working a lot, and they say, oh, I have to train. Shit. No, then don't go into training, or do another session just really easy, and don't be too addicted on your plan. Yeah, this is what I honestly do sometimes. I just, when I see, okay, I have a really hard session, a tough session, I say, and I can't, because I don't know, my son is just sick, and my wife has to work a lot, and then I say, okay, no, I'm gonna go for a run, but no interval run. I just go easy 40 minutes, because this is right now the best thing I can do, just keep moving, but no more impact. And this is what you also have to keep in mind, that at the end, race day is race day, and all the other days are just training days. And many professional athletes and age troopers, they think like every training day must be pretty much pretty close to the race day. No, it is not. It's just a normal training day. And it's really, especially long distance training, is just to keep on moving every day, and not about to do crazy things. Okay, sometimes well prepared, then you have to do some crazy things, that's for sure. But you have to have a high average. And this is key. And this is what I've learned about the last years. Just to have constant training load, and also be like relaxed, because training race day is important, and not all the other days of the year.
Perfect. No, I think that's some solid advice. So that's excellent. I think that can definitely resonate with a lot of the listeners. So excellent. And I mean, just kind of going over a few of the age group training tips, just to kind of end off the podcast here. When we talk about traveling, I know that can be very encompassing and like a hard thing for triathletes to do, especially if they're traveling with family and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to traveling with your bike and stuff, or all your gear on a plane. So perfect example, when you went to Kona, do you have any tips for age groupers that you found out that kind of work for you or what didn't work? Like I can imagine for starters, a bike case is probably something that you shouldn't cheap out on, right?
Yeah. So the most important thing is on travel day before travels, don't train. because you're getting weak, and especially when you have a long flight, then it's gonna hit you. And it's and even when you have the feeling like, oh yeah, I have time, I have another 2 hours really for free, then yeah, stay and relax and don't train. And for traveling, just take your own things, like take some cashews. I'm taking like para Brazil nuts, I think. Some stuff you can grab during being on a plane. Drink a lot during flying, then you can really avoid getting sick or stuff, and you don't eat the kind of junk food which is served in the planes. This is what I really can give as an advice. And yeah, if you have connecting flights, just take enough time, especially for Kona, in between these flights, so that you don't have to stress. Stress is also a big thing to avoid doing traveling. Yeah,
for sure. No, I think that's great advice, right? I know one of the biggest things that we don't think about before traveling, but when you get there, is the jet lag, and you know, ways to kind of mitigate that, like you just said there, like kind of eat well, make sure you're staying on top of hydration and some solid nutrition and getting some adequate rest. I think that will help you from preventing you from getting sick, right? Last thing you want to do is show up in a different country off a plane and then you're sick or tired, right? So
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. That's the point. And a lot of people want to do like better or like, yeah, often, especially Kona, it's like, it's just to relax and not trying to do better than others, just to do solid. It sounds easy, but at the end, it's often not that easy. Just do normal and be well prepared. Yeah, that's key.
Perfect. No, that's good. And then touching on nutrition there for a second. So on-course nutrition, I guess, in particular, it's a huge part of long-distance triathlon. And it's especially important when you, like I said, like get into those long races, those hot races like Kona, for example. So I guess, what are your strategies for on-course nutrition for your full Ironman races? Like, do you have any tips for age groupers out there?
Yeah, of course. What I have is after my swimming, like in the first transition back and in the swim to bike transition back, I have a bottle with isotonic drink or a bar. Yeah, it's also good, but isotonic is better because you just, it's fast in digesting. So when you're coming out from the water, just take the bottle and take 3-4 nips, and then because you're losing some energy during the swim, and if you like refill right after the swim, then you're avoiding like this kind of little energy hole before getting on the bike. And then on the bike, eating every 20 minutes, I think it's key. And for sure, the better your fat burning is, the better you will race on Ironman. And this is what you can train on, what I train, because my fat burning rate is really bad, especially on the bike. That's why I do like high intensity or really low intensity to increase my fat burning. But still, you have to eat some carbohydrates, especially on hot and humid races. So every 20 minutes, take your gel. I put some like gels in my bottle, 8 to 9 in the bottle, mixed up with some water. But not too much water. Like it's like really when you take it, it's a big sugar fluid. Yeah, every 20 minutes I nip there, and then yeah, it's perfect for the
awesome bike. So that's great. So you're talking about fat burning there, and this might be something you're on or might not, so I just kind of want to ask that. When it comes to just your daily diet, are you on like a high fat lower carb diet, or is it just you focus on the fat burning zones in training?
Yeah, exactly. Especially now, because I'm a new coach and new training style. I'm focusing on balanced, healthy food. Yeah, of course, but I'm not focusing on really like high fat, low carb. This is that's also a thing you have to go in really carefully and step by step, and not to decide like if you decide the head is often way faster than the body. The body needs time to adapt. And yeah, so getting slowly into it is for sure better. What I'm doing is like before, like a morning bike ride, having a coffee, and then going 1 hour bike ride, doing 1 hour bike ride with a coffee and without eating. So this is what I'm doing right at the moment. So 1 hour is nothing crazy, but yeah, when we ate the last time was like dinner. When you had dinner, then all the whole night you're like sleeping and not eating. Then in the morning, coffee, and then immediately go on a bike. Then you're way faster on the fat burning, but only 1 hour. And then after this hour, you can eat, or I eat good carbs, good quality carbs. And this is what I'm doing right now, and doing like some fat training, but not really focusing on my daily nutrition on high fat.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's great. That seems very attainable. So I think if other athletes try that, that seems realistic. You know, sometimes those diets can be very complex. So I think you have a very solid approach to that, right? It's you know, keep it simple and keep it nutritious. So good.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're working. I mean, the age groupers are working, and then you're coming home, you walk like 8 to 10 hours. And yeah, and then when you are on low carb, the risk getting sick is so high. So you better train, you better have a high quality training, high quality carb, and high quality nutrition all in all. That's, in my eyes, it's way better than trying to do some crazy stuff.
Perfect. No, excellent. I agree with that. And so I guess just the last formal question here, just for a little motivation for age groupers for their next, you know, maybe Zwift ride, or if they have nice weather, then their next long outdoor ride. When you're digging deep in a training session, or perfect example, when you were struggling or hurting like you were there in Kona at the latter stage of the race, like what kept you going? Is there anything that sparks that fire inside you that, you know, keeps you pushing and push past those dark moments? Because inevitably you're able to kind of push through those moments and get through and finish the race, right? So any advice on what other athletes can do to dig deep in those times?
Yeah, what I can say is doing training when I'm suffering, I just think about what at the end what I want to achieve, and I'm also thinking like, okay, like now you're on the point that others would drop out even the training, but I'm still in, and I go through it. I can, you can, and other would go out now, but you don't. It's kind of let's say thinking of I'm working with pictures. Let's say I see like Frodo and Alistair beside me just talking to me, like, say, what, you're gonna drop out now in this training? We can do better easily. And then I say, okay, so this keeps me in. And also, yeah, my big goal, I mean, yeah, just to focus, and I say, no, I want to win this race, I want to achieve that. So let's do it. Yeah, so
perfect.
I'm cheering myself. Yeah, it sounds crazy, but yeah.
No, I love it. That's great. I think visualization there, what it sounds like you're doing there is super, super key. And the more that, you know, us as age groupers can, you know, incorporate that into the training, the easier it becomes readily available for us to use on race day. So I think that's great to hear that you're doing that. So excellent. And now I guess looking ahead here to next season, have you thought about your what races you might be doing for next year? Have you figured out your schedule yet, or is that still in the works?
No, it's still not finalized, especially because of changing my coach. We just to look how I'm responding to the new training style. No, it's really open right now. We're going to decide, I think, yeah, end of January. I can't really say in which direction it goes. If I'm ready, like number wise, then yeah, I go. But if not, then I don't. So yeah, I don't panic. I don't stress. That's the point I'm staying where I'm staying.
Perfect. Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, I mean, we look forward to that next season. But you know, I guess for now, that's pretty much a wrap. Obviously, I keep going all day here, but I'm sure you've got a busy rest of day planned. So I won't keep you here any longer. But I mean, as we finish up here, you know, sponsorships for pro triathletes always make such a big difference because it allows the pros to do what they do. So I'm always a big fan of, you know, seeing these sponsors support these athletes. And so I know you've got quite a few sponsors yourself. And are there any sponsors that you would like to give a shout out to that are with you going into next season?
Yeah, no, I have my partners are by my side. It doesn't matter what happened, and I probably no partner coming, no new partner. But yeah, I'm really, really happy with my current partners, and my current partners are really happy with me, and we're both looking really forward to the new season. And for sure, I will do some big races. That's for sure. That's also my motivation to face the big names. And I'm doing this together with all my partners, and that's great. We're a great team.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I always love to hear that. So that's excellent. And I mean, for those out there who don't already follow you on social media, where's the best place they can follow you online throughout next season? Do you have a website or Instagram or?
Yeah, I'm currently working on my website, so give me some more weeks to go. But then, yeah, Instagram, Maurice Clavel. You can find me Facebook as well, Maurice Clavel, just hammer, or like search hashtag Craval. Then you're going to find me as well. Yeah, just, you can follow if you want. That would be cool. And if any athlete had any question, don't hesitate, just ask. Yeah, I really can understand every question. And yeah, and I would really love to answer all questions. Doesn't matter if it's a really complex one or a really simple one. I mean, if you're a beginner, there's no question, not a bad question. I know.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. So, and, you know, that's one of the things I love about triathlon, right, is that, you know, a lot of the professionals out there are so approachable that you can go to them and ask questions and they'll most often respond and give the time of their day to kind of help you out. So I think that's awesome that you said that. So great, man. I think that's a great place to end off this podcast. And thanks so much for taking the time. We really appreciate that. And all the best in your training and going into the next season. We'll all be rooting for you.
Yeah, cool. Thank you very much for having me, and see you around next season. And to all the athletes, good luck for 2020. It's going to be awesome and cool. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Take care, man.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. Maurice is an incredible role model in triathlon, and his story in his first full distance triathlon race at Challenge Roth is a huge inspiration to me, and I hope it inspired you as well. Now, if you guys want to hear more podcasts like these, then of course, hit that subscribe button. And you can follow me on Instagram at pacing.and.racing. And you can check all these episodes out on YouTube as well by searching Pacing and Racing. And lastly, if you did like this episode, please just take 2 minutes to leave a kind review on the podcast channel, as that helps us get heard by more listeners through the podcast platform algorithms. Anyways, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time. Cheers.